All right.
Man.
We are back for another.
I'll be quiet.
It is episode 6 of the Barnes Bullet Points podcast. What do you think about that name? Is that the first time you've heard it?
Yeah.
The Bullet Points podcast.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Does it make sense to you?
It does.
So to my left today, we have world-renowned Mitchell Cookson.
Not me. Cookson. Two people to the left.
Right.
Alan just got
excited. I set you up. I know. Did you see that?
Yeah, he did set me up.
I said
looking
him up.
Right at me when he said it too.
To my right, Mr. Gregory Sloan.
Hello.
Everybody's heard these guys. But some people have probably talked to the guy directly to my left. Mr. Allen. How are you?
Good. Good. Loving life. Living the dream.
Is this the first podcast that you've ever been on?
Ever.
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 Well, welcome. Let's see. Where do I have that?
I've been on the news, but
don't I have that thing?
Never on a podcast.
First podcast.
It's good.
Okay. So we wanted to bring Alan on today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do here at Barnes? A little bit of background about Alan.
Well, I started in the Ballistic Lab.
Okay.
I was there for a couple of years working for Greg. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Saw that there was an opportunity to utilize my knowledge and my years of experience, decades of experience, actually, 6 decades I started when I was like 7, 8 years old, reloading, casting bullets, getting into this. And it's been my number one love as far as a hobby ever since. And I saw an opportunity to talk to people about ways to help people. My wife, she says, like, if I'm heading the range, I said, I'll be back in an hour. She goes, no, you won't. You're going to bump into someone. And you're going to be talking to him. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
You probably talk to somebody for an hour.
Try not to.
Yeah.
Try not to.
Okay.
Because I can even get burnt out talking to one person for too long.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've been in there for a number of years. Really enjoy it. Love the people I work with. Love the working conditions. And this is, to me, this is a epitome of my career as far as what has led me up to this. I don't see myself doing anything else, go anywhere else until I retire.
Right.
And really enjoy it. Barnes is a great company. I've been here for, what, 3 ownerships now? This is the 3rd one. This is the best one I've seen so far. Really having a lot of fun.
Nice. So, I mean, I guess going back even a little bit more, and I know that you kind of hit on it, right, that you were reloading at 7, 8 years old and stuff like that. But, like, tell us a little bit more background of you, like, because you were in the military, right?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, and I guess your shooting experience, right? Like you talked about going to the range, but I mean, I know that you shoot a lot of competitions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So okay, let's discuss some of that,
okay,
some of your hunting experience, okay, right?
24 years Army,
okay,
enlisted right out of high school, get the GI Bill, but went into weapons repair, fixed and aimware from a 1911 to an M110 howitzer. 8-inch howitzer.
Yep.
Did that for a number of years and then switched over to EOD and had a lot of fun doing that, blowing
right
stuff up.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many years ago, I started getting into longer range shooting. And then 16 years ago, started shooting precision rifle series or style shooting matches.
Right.
I think it was before, well, it was definitely before NRL, it was, or and Hunter, NRL 22. I'm not sure if PRS was actually up and running yet. Would run, shoot a lot of local club matches, probably at about 3 weekends a month.
Yeah.
And 4th weekend, I spent reloading and annealing brass and then back at it. And had a lot of fun, met a lot of people, a lot of wonderful people. Sometimes I win a match, usually not, but would do okay.
Yeah.
So, and then...
how many matches do you think you shoot per year?
Now, not so much. I'm starting to age out.
All right.
All right.
But you recently shot one, right?
Yeah, shot an NRL Hunter match at the North Springs Range south of Price, Utah. I think it's the... I won't say it, but...
You can say it. It's okay.
You sure?
Yeah. Well, we can just say a competitor.
A competitor was
mainly sponsors.
Right, mainly sponsored match. And it's the match itself is a Saturday Sunday match.
Right.
But I go on Fridays and shoot it as an RO.
Right.
And so we end up shooting a 2-day match in one day. Makes for a very long day. Last year, Viral Dallin, the match director, he had us run 24 courses of fire in one day.
Wow.
This year, he went easy on us. We only had 19.
Is that why you're aging out of it? Because you can't shoot 24 in a day or what?
It does make for a very long day, but I'm still capable.
Yeah.
I'm still capable. I just don't move as fast. I don't get up off the ground as fast, so I usually time out now.
But okay.
I didn't always. So, and then on Saturday and Sunday, I actually am in charge of a course of fire as the range officer for that course of fire.
Nice.
And I love it because I get to know more people. People come up. Sometimes I only see them yearly at these matches.
Right.
And I get to share with some of the competitors. I get to teach some of the competitors. But I also learn from what I watch.
Right.
And I get to incorporate that into what I do.
Well, it's kind of interesting, right? Because being an RO and doing it well before anybody else does it, right? You're kind of the first couple guys that really run through the stages.
Right.
Me coming off of the first time that I've ever shot an NRL Hunter this year,
it
right?
was last month, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was a little while back, right? But I was able to obviously experience that for the first time, but then like watching like what the ROs are seeing, I would look at it as a way, like you said, to learn, because you get to run through it and kind of remember what you did on that stage to try to get through it.
Yeah.
And then you see some of these, you know, top guys out there and how cleanly they're able to just get through a stage.
Yeah.
Right. They got 45 seconds, a minute left. It feels like when they're done and you're like, man, how did you get off? You know, you had first round engagement every time, whatever that it is.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's pretty cool and probably like helps your shooting ability or your thought process, right? Of knowing the next time I do that, I'm going to try this to see if that helps me.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I like it when the youth or the young gun shooters and what they call skills shooters come up. They're not up there for points or prizes. They're there to learn. They're there to have a good time.
Yep.
And if they ask for it, and I'll ask them, we're allowed to actually coach them through.
Right, yeah.
And so I get to impart my years of knowledge and experience while they're on the clock. And when they come off the clock, I can spend a little bit of time with them, but then I got to bring the next shooter up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're like, Alan, hurry up. Quit up. You're talking to too many people. Look at the line back there behind you.
Right.
So.
I mean, like when I shot my NRL, I just did skills. And it was cool to like experience that. Get a little bit of help as I was going along, and I started to ask for more as I started to do more stages, because I, you know, the first couple you're just kind of like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to like engage targets, try to get through with the time. But as I kind of started to see other people doing that as well, it's like, oh, okay, I can actually get some help while I'm doing this, because like you said, it's just more for getting the experience rather than trying to actually get the points and quote compete.
And me at my stage, I'm there to prove myself. I'm there to prove my equipment, my techniques. I'm not trying to earn points. I'm not trying to earn prizes because I'm no longer up in there anymore. And so that's what it is to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like this match, I shot my 6.5 by 47 with our 145 match burners. Did a whole lot better. Last month at the Vernal match, I shot a 300 win short mag with 200 match kings.
How's that?
Well, they came up. People are like, hey, did you see your impacts? I'm like, I didn't see nothing. Recoil, there was enough recoil. Even with a really good muzzle brake, I'm not seeing impacts. I'm not seeing misses. I'm just sort of, you know, hoping I'm right in there.
Yeah.
If I did see one impact. It was about 900 yards.
Okay.
I had enough time to get back on target after the recoil and actually catch the impact.
Nice. So,
anyway.
Well, I mean, you kind of covered it there, because I was going to ask you, like, what's your caliber choice when you're shooting these matches and what's your ammo selection or bullet selection, because obviously you're hand loading.
Yeah. I ran 3-1 mag one match, and then this year the 3-1 short mag, but I typically run my 6.5 by 47. I've got a couple different rifles, one more of a traditional, you know, hunting rifle, short barrel. I run it suppressed with just a more of a typical hunting scope. Still dialing up, you need to.
Right.
And then the other rifle's a little bit more tricked out, more features. It's got a chassis, it's got a surge in action, things like that, detachable. Where the first rifle, I was actually single loading from a stock pack on the side, dropping in cartridge at a time.
It seems like that's kind of slow.
It is a little bit slower.
Right.
But again, I'm not worried about trying to get all the points. I just want to get one hit, one target. That's my goal.
Okay.
Don't walk away from a course of fire with a zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to butt in here the 6.5 by 47.
Yeah.
That's a great cartridge.
Great cartridge.
I think we need to talk about that for a minute.
Greg shoots it too.
I do.
Let's go.
Yeah. That's actually, so I met Alan for the first time.
Yeah.
I don't remember the year.
At least, well, hold on. 2008.
Okay. He remembers the year.
September's your birthday, too.
September 2008. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
No, I think it's important to note you guys are actually related, right?
No.
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 No. What?
Well, there's a reason we sat you two together.
Exactly.
No.
I mean, everybody can see the resemblance.
The inside joke is Alan is everyone's dad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that he's Mitchell's dad, like actually like biological dad.
Yeah.
But he was shooting a match instead of walking him down the aisle a couple weeks ago his wedding like he was supposed to be because the match was more important. But
I wanted to be there.
So 6.5 by 2.
Yeah. So, yeah, I met Alan at a match 2008, I guess.
It's been a long 2008, time. The Utah State Sniper Shoot
this
Championship.
This is probably before PRS was even PRS.
I think so.
It was practical precision rifle.
Yeah.
Utah State, yeah.
And it was a three-gun thing. It was carbine. It was handgun. Like in the police shoot house, as well as long range precision.
Yeah, so I was there as a Barnes rep,
yeah,
shooting the match, and I was on Alan's squad.
Nice.
So that's when I first met Alan.
That's cool.
It was fun, but yeah,
it was love at first sight.
It was.
Yeah. we switched emails, and I email him questions over the next few years.
And then all of a sudden, you got a job.
And then he got a job. Yeah, he would reach out and ask a bullet question. I remember getting a few phone calls from him over the years and, hey, I'm going to go hunt elk and what about this and what about that? So
hunting elk?
Yeah.
In Utah?
That's my favorite.
That's your favorite?
Yeah.
How many times have you done it?
Too many times to count.
Okay. How many times have you done it in Utah with a good tag?
Good tag? Once.
Yeah.
That's about it. You don't.
How many years have you lived in Utah?
42.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad I'm not a Utah resident.
There's a reason Dale doesn't
live reason.
In
yeah.
Utah.
Yeah.
If you want to hunt often, there's a lot of quality.
Yeah.
I heard not opportunity.
Idaho's really nice for that. Wyoming's really nice for that.
Okay. I notice you're not saying Montana.
I did not say Montana.
Stay out of my state.
Montana's the place to go.
Yeah, everyone move to Montana.
That's
Leave Utah.
Yeah. Bozeman is really nice. Bozeman, Helena, Missoula.
Utah's full.
Yeah. Utah's full.
Full. We're full.
I see places for sale all over the place around here.
That's because they're all moving to Montana.
Yeah, because they want tags.
But yeah, 6.5 by 47. Alan shot one before I did, but that's an awesome cartridge.
Yeah.
When I started getting more into competition shooting, in fact, the match that I met Alan at, I was shooting a 6.5 284.
What would you compare the 6.5 by 47 to?
It is what a Creedmoor wishes it could be.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a baby Creedmoor.
But it outperforms it.
Yeah, it really can.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I
you're
can
saying
shoot.
That you would shoot an elk with a 6.5 by 47, but not a 6.5 Creed?
I have numerous times.
Really, you're shooting the same bullet, right, to pretty much the same velocity.
Okay.
It just does it more efficiently.
Got it.
Nothing wrong with Creedmoor. I like to joke around, obviously, about that. But the 47 is just a very efficient case.
Yeah.
And it's great brass. You know, generally you're going to be shooting Lapua or Lapois. Alan, why don't you give me your pronunciation?
Lapua.
Lapua.
20 plus years ago, after I got my FFL, I went down to SHOT Show, and I got corrected on the pronunciation by the folks at the Sierra booth and the Lapua booth. Hmm. So when I say it here, I get teased. I'm the only one here that says it Lapua.
Well, he's doing a little bit better. Sometimes it's like Lapua, but I'm just saying. I tease. No, yeah, but it's a great brass, efficient round. Like you can shoot, I'm going to throw a number out there. Don't hold me to it. I probably shouldn't do this on air, but it's very referenced known data, so I feel safe. But like 36 grains of Varget with a 140 grain match burner will get the same velocity that Creedmoor will. Burning a whole lot more powder.
Right.
Okay. And I mean, my gun just shoots. I'm talking like .2s
really?
Consistently.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Great round. I've not done hunting with it.
Yeah.
It's a match gun, small rifle primer, which doesn't mean you can't hunt with it, but there's obviously times, especially in very cold climates, that I prefer to have a large rifle primer for better ignition. But as a match cartridge, and even a crossover. You know, I've always loved that gun. But yeah, Alan's a big 6.5x47 guy.
6.5x47.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great case.
16 years I've been running that cartridge. My first
in matches and hunting, obviously. Yeah,
my first 100 cases, I had 28 reloads on before I was getting bolt click at the top, and I tossed them.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So annealing every 1 to 3 firings, never more than 3 firings.
Yeah.
So that way, it kept neck tension a lot more consistent.
Yeah.
Your ES and SD downs.
I will say though, over the years, and I don't shoot much for competitions. I haven't shot one, in fact, for quite some time. I need to start shooting again on those. But the one drawback I ran into is as I get busier with life, multiple hobbies,
right,
kids, all these other things, I have less and less time to, you know, dedicate. I'm not Alan. You know, I don't get a reload for a weekend, you know, go to the range for 3 days.
I'm an empty nester.
Yeah.
Different
stage of life, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
I obviously do a lot of hand loading still.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of times where it's like, if this gun was a 6.5 Creedmoor, I could just shoot precision match ammo with the 140 and be fine,
right?
And get great performance. Is it the same level of performance as my hand loads in a 6.5x47 with the 140 match burner? No, but it's more than adequate.
Yeah.
And so there's been those times where it's like, yeah, I haven't done as much with that rifle in the last few years because it's just not my priority right now.
Right.
And the last couple matches I shot were a 6.5 Creedmoor for that reason. I just shot our factory load, and
yeah,
it worked great.
Yeah, and I shot 6.5 Creed, right, and precision match, 140 grain, and I mean, loved it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I was extremely impressed with it. I mean, that was, you know, I'd played a little bit with precision match, but that was the first time of, like, putting a lot of rounds down range, like, getting prepped for that, and I was really, really impressed with our precision match stuff.
Yeah.
So, cool. Mitchell, what do you have to add before we jump into deeper things?
Let's talk about hunting.
Okay.
Mitchell doesn't know what, he doesn't know what to talk about when we're talking about competition shooting.
I mean, I'm with you right there. Like, we could talk hunting all day. So I'm happy to do that.
I agree. I'd rather talk hunting. Yeah. But I can talk both.
Yeah.
But I think it goes... I
mean, yeah, you're a ballistics guy all in all, right?
That's so right. But we talked earlier, like, the cool thing with match shooting and even, like, the NRL specifically, you know, this has been said, obviously, and it's maybe the draw, but if you're just a hunter like Mitchell and he wants to improve his skills in the field, shooting these matches can get you there. You
right.
know, can obviously drastically increase your ability to do field positional shooting.
Right.
You know.
Perishable skill.
Yeah.
I took a year off about... 10 years ago, I took a year off, had some family issues going on, and after the issues were over, I came back, and over at North Springs, Ron Young, my best friend down there, he would run a match every month, and he had about 95 shooters. I came back after that year off. I was like 90th. I mean, I was horrible. Next month, I came in 50th. Next month, I won the match.
Nice.
So it is a perishable skill.
Yeah.
But absolutely. It can come back quickly, but you got to put in the time. You got to be squeezing the trigger.
Yeah, I mean, there's
and so not many just guys, off the bench.
Right. Well, and that's where I was going with that is, I mean, we were having this conversation off air, you know, earlier, is there's so many guys that in the off season, right, all they do is, yeah, I mean, maybe they're going to the range, but they're putting a box through it. They're shooting on the bench. They're shooting out to 300 yards, whatever that it is.
Right.
But then they never get into those positional type of shooting, you know, things. And then they get on this hunt and they're, you know, everything's happened so fast, right?
Right.
In that scenario that you're not able to get comfortable. You potentially miss your shot or make a bad shot because of being in a position that you're not comfortable with.
Yeah. I think as hunters, it's easy to focus on the game, the scouting, the tags, the application strategy. I mean, we get so far into that now with
absolutely.
The technology, what's out there, right? We can dig into, you know, if you're like many of us out here, we're hunting multiple Western states.
Right.
You can get so wrapped up into that that sometimes the shooting is like the last of it.
Right.
Like, well, you're putting the least effort to that.
And it's kind of funny, right? Because we have the inside joke that everybody wants to get tricked out optics, tricked out guns, everything like that. And then, like, the ammo, the bullet is the last thing they ever think about. And it's almost the same thing, you know. But what I'm getting at is that, right, is that the bullet's the only thing that touches the animal.
Absolutely.
To hit the animal. So if you turn that into the scouting, into the prepping, into whatever, going to the gym and everything like that, right, you can be the most prepared ever. But if you're not shooting regularly or shooting in proper positions and putting in that time, now your once in a lifetime opportunity comes up and you make a bad shot, or you completely whiff or whatever that it is. It's like you need to be doing that as much as possible. And the other stuff will kind of work itself out, if you will. Right. Yeah. I mean, you could still be doing some of that scouting or.
Right. I mean, they all matter.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
But I've seen it play out, with family and friends on hunts that they may be spending maybe a little bit more time scouting.
Right.
Scouting's always great.
Yeah.
But, when you have the, we just already talked about Utah.
Yeah.
You wait 20 plus years for an elk tag. You want to be on the mountain every weekend locating that big bull. And I get it. But if you're not going to the range, guess what? When it comes down to it, is your system dialed in? Do you know your load? What bull are you shooting? If you're going to be taking shots across canyons at 400, 500, 600, 700 yards, are you dialed in? It's not just, hey, I got this cool scope. It's got this thing called a turret. I don't really know what that means, but I got this rangefinder.
Yeah, I got this CDS dial from Leupold or whatever, right?
I just spin it,
and I just put the number on it that it said me on my rangefinder, and I just pulled the trigger.
That's all it takes.
I mean, to an extent, yes. But if you're not, shooting off your pack or shooting off, like you said, a bipod or whatever, a tripod. Well,
and even just understanding the wind, your zero.
Right.
How does your, and not to bash on any optics makers, but I have shot everything under the sun, right? Top of the line to cheap stuff. And I really don't care whose name is on the scope.
Yeah.
Does it dial a quarter minute when you do click
every single time?
Have you done a tall target test? Have you verified that? Are you accounting for that in your solution? How return to zero is it? When you dial that turret and you just, dial 15 minutes up.
Right.
When it returns to zero, is it right back to zero or now is it 2 inches low?
Right.
All these things, if you're not out there verifying and spend the time practicing and gaining those skills and understanding where your limitations are, where your equipment's limitations are, it could come to bite you.
Yeah.
Tripods. I'm seeing a lot more tripod use in the field. And it's a very valuable tool, but there are limitations.
Right.
There are mistakes that can be made unless you have shot ahead of time and figured out shoulder pressure, angle up and down, things like that. When I was watching you on the NRL Hunter, I'm like, I was impressed. I was like, you were shooting pretty much off tripod from what I could tell.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like I was trying a lot of different positions as I went through the stages because shooting the skills, I was watching what other people were doing, right? Because I was trying to kind of like, okay, this guy's been doing this for a while because we were in a group with some guys that shoot them regularly.
Yeah.
And I tried to watch those guys and be like, okay, I see what they're doing here, and then they're moving to that position or whatever, right?
And as a skill shooter, you're allowed to do
that. Right, exactly. And then I would try to go mimic what I saw them do.
Yeah.
Well, because I never really practiced a lot of those, I wasn't shooting very well.
Right.
So immediately I wanted to go back to what do I know and what am I comfortable with, right? So that's when I started pushing to shooting tripod on most of those stages from then on out.
So you are comfortable
if shooting because I could just shoot it much more comfortable from a seated position, for whatever reason. And I didn't even have a rear support, right? I was kind of like using my knee as much as I could or something like that as a rear support. But yeah, I mean, and it was great to be able to have – because Colby and I both went, and he shot it for Sierra, right? I shot it for Barnes.
Yep.
And we kind of videoed each other, right, to be able to create that content. So it was great to have Colby there to be able to video me. And now, I mean, I didn't even know that you had watched it, right?
Yeah,
so like,
I watched it.
Like, knowing that I could, one, critique myself and see where I was kind of messing up or something like that, or potentially jerking the trigger or whatever. And then having, potentially you now help and critique that, right, as somebody that's been doing it for 40 years. I mean, that's pretty.
I noticed you sat mostly when you were shooting off tripod.
Yep.
Most shooters are kneeling or at least one knee down.
Yep.
Rarely are shooters actually sitting and doing it because their tripod's higher.
Right.
The beauty of the tripod is, well, when it comes to any type of shooting, the lower the ground you can get, the more stable you are. But right. sometimes you can't always be prone and see where you're shooting, so you got to get up. And that's where you got to start practicing those other positions
right.
and figuring out what you're good at, what little tricks help you improve that. So if you're learning to shoot off of a tripod, you need to figure things out
right.
and not just on a flat square range where everything's flat, but Absolutely. Shooting up and shooting yeah. down.
Well, and I mean, and that's where I was able to kind of do that. I had some uphill, some cross canyon, some downhill type of stuff. But to me, it was like, if I can sit on my butt, again, I can throw my knee up there. Yep. I can use my knee as my rear support with my elbow. And I just kind of knew that from, again, I mean, I've been shooting for 35 years of my life. I just kind of knew that from doing it in the past, doing it in the military, everything else, right? So it just kind of like naturally was like, okay, I know I can do this pretty damn accurately.
Yeah.
So I might as well just like go back to what I know rather than trying stuff, even though I'm in the skills, right? I still want to be as competitive yeah. as I can be and hit targets as I can. Yeah. So
I would watch shooters who come in as a skills division shooter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy's not skills. He's a very good shooter. He's just never shot this match. So right. he comes in and tries it, and which I think is a great concept.
Yeah.
So it introduces him to him, and that way he's able to figure out, you know, does he want to do this as a competition or yep. does he want to just do it to improve his own
Well, techniques? And I mean, to be honest, right, like I'm not trying to go do NRL hunters all over the place and really compete. I just want to make my shooting better, and it gives me something to do in the, quote, off season,
yep.
right? I mean, we did that right before Mitchell and I went on that bear hunt. So it was like a kind of a perfect timing, right? I got a weekend long of shooting, you know, shooting whatever, 150 rounds, something like that, right before we were able to go and, you know, do a cool bear hunt, and it kind of set something. And I was literally shooting a 6.5 Creedmoor on both of those different, like one was in the one on the hunt, or sorry, one was in the NRL hunter. And then I just changed guns and shot our LRX on that hunt.
Yeah.
So
does he snore?
I mean, I never heard him. I felt like the goats were more of an issue than.
Did the goats sleep in the tent?
They tried with to. You?
They tried
multiple times. Yeah. I can't hardly hear you.
We were taking a nap, goats. And I woke up. There's a crashing in the tent. I thought like a bear or something was in the tent. I look up and the goat was trying to get out of the rain. I was trying to stay in the tent.
Yeah,
but.
And I was sleeping through it because you took a photo.
Yeah, Dale. Just
I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that the goat was in the tent at the time.
That sounds like Mitchell.
Yeah,
yeah.
They burp all night. And they're noisy.
They do. All right. What do you want to talk about hunting? Since we just started talking about hunting, and you still didn't even interject.
Yeah, I was letting you guys do your thing. The tripod thing, super cool. I hadn't used one until last year. I actually bought one. Use from Kagan down the ballistics lab, and it's perfect for, she was then my fiance, wife now, but that was her first hunting season last year, so I wanted to give her opportunities to get more stable and be more comfortable, and because when you're hunting, you don't always get, like you say, you don't get perfect shooting positions, you don't have a bench, you're out there, sometimes you got to make quick shots, they got to be standing up off shoulder. So I thought the tripod would be helpful, and it was. We took it elk hunting on her first hunt, happened to be an elk hunt in Utah, and we took this pretty dang big tripod. It's probably, I don't know, 6-7 pounds. It's big. It's a big field optics one.
Yeah.
And anyways, we got down to where the elk were, and it was going to be a off shoulder shot. We were only 75 yards away from the elk, but we could have kneeled down, but she just wasn't comfortable shooting right. like that. So I set the tripod up and pointed it right to where the elk was coming. She's saying, "Where is it? Where is it?" And I pointed the gun right to it and gave it to her. She goes, "Oh, there it is."
Yeah.
And then, she smoked her first elk at 75 yards, just hammered it.
Nice.
It ran maybe 50 yards and kind of slowed down. I said, "Hit it again if you can." And she smoked it again. Two hits on it, they were within an inch, right behind the shoulder, hit a little bit high, but still getting in the lungs.
Yeah.
But tripod, I don't know if she could have killed it without it. I don't know.
Right.
I don't think she would have got steady because it would have been off shoulder and just a new hunter. And even not even an experienced hunter shooting off shoulder a live animal, you're jacked up. You're not going to be steady.
Yeah, I mean, right. even 7,500 yards, right? I mean, like, is it really that far? No. But like you said, offhand, like that very quick, you know, reactionary type shot. Like,
oh, yeah, breathing and adrenaline. Most people aren't making an offhand standing shot.
Yeah.
Even on an elk, right?
Yeah.
I think she was wearing a backpack, too, so that doesn't help. You got this
The
strap of the backpack in the way, and you're excited.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing with those, like you mentioned, it's big. Like, I have one. I'm pretty sure it's even the same model. You know, but they're carbon fiber. Like, they're the giant shooting tripods you see people use, like, in precision shooting.
Yeah.
But they are light enough to, like, especially if you're hunting with somebody, like, if you know, you've got your spouse, your hunting partner, your kids, whatever.
Right.
You can pack them still, right? But I've used them. I've had kids shoot off of them. My dad used one in Wyoming hunting antelope, you know, 450-yard shot on a pronghorn that, because of the angle and where we were and the sagebrush height, like, you were not getting that shot unless you were standing.
Right.
And, like, he's not that stable anyways.
Yeah.
But the ability to, you know, and his gun had a, you know, a mount. It's like an Arca rail, like we're running now, but it was a, like a more of a saddle, hog saddle type setup where we can clamp the stock, 6.5 Creedmoor 127, you know, and he downs an antelope at 450 yards standing. You know, he never would have made that shot without that tripod.
Yeah, and you said it had kind of that death grip type of thing. So those are really cool, right? Because you can set up that tripod, get it super comfortable, lock that gun in, and then, I mean, you basically don't even need a rear support. Like you are the rear support and just kind of moving it to where it is. And you basically don't even have to touch the gun. You just pull the trigger.
Well, and that is one cool thing back, not to leave hunting, but to go back to the precision shooting, especially more in the NRL hunter format, is the ability to pick up those skills, like Alan talked about, and to watch other people. When I went away from precision shooting for a few years and I went to a guarding match down in Arizona, you know, I was a little bit, and I shot pretty good. Like, I finished okay. But it was kind of crazy because just in a few, like, it was maybe like a year and a half off. I hadn't been to a match.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because the equipment had changed, right? The technology had changed. The positions had changed, right? Because you watch one guy do it and you're like, oh, that works. I'm going to try that. Yeah. And what they were doing with tripods, I'd never even seen before.
Yeah, like giving that rear support.
Or like using a taller tripod as a rear support where you're grabbing it with your hand and it's holding the rear and you've got to do, like, we're sitting there like idiots, like trying to do stuff like setting the gun on top of it and people are like, what are you doing?
Right.
And then when you watch the other guy run the stage and you're like, oh.
That makes sense.
Why did I go first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guinea pig.
Yeah.
Yep.
But no, I learned, you know, that was like 7-8 years ago. But it was just interesting because, like I said, in that time, things that already progressed and changed. And you can take those skills. And I've used that in the field now where you might have a backpack and an optics tripod for my spotter. And I'm going to use the backpack as a front rest and my optics tripod set tall, which is one of the legs, as my rear support, more in a kneeling position, like Alan said. And you can get crazy steady.
Yeah. One of the things we were, you know, I used to work for Andy Newberg. I mean, just I'm more putting that out for the podcast listeners. We were on a hunt. We were on an antelope hunt in Nevada one time, and he used his optics tripod, right, for the front support, and then he actually used his trekking pole as a rear support, and he wedged the butt of it into, you know, the little handle thing on a trekking pole, and then wedged that into the ground as a rear support. And I was like, that's pretty genius. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, cool. Like, that's a simple thing that you wouldn't have really thought about, if you will. So now I've used it as a front support before. I'll just actually kind of like slide the front end of the gun through that and then use that and be able to hold on to it as a front support before, when I haven't had a tripod or have to get a little bit higher, and it works pretty damn well.
You look where we are now with, you know, hunting rifles running Arca rails and pick rails, and, you know, I've got some cool stuff from a couple different companies that I've been messing with. You know, I bought the new Tricer bipod that I'm super excited about. Lightweight, but it allows you to shoot. You know, obviously, if you can get prone on a bipod, it's your pick, right?
Right.
But how many times in the field can you get prone off a bipod out west?
Right.
It's not very often. But if I can get steady and have a lightweight bipod that I can sit and have it taller with something in the rear, like a backpack or a spotter, an optics tripod, you know, I can get pretty steady for a pretty far shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, bipods have really come a long way. They're getting lighter. They're getting longer.
Yep.
Quick detach, quick attach. My last 4 or 5 animals have been off bipod.
Yeah.
And it's very well used in the NRL hunter matches.
Yep.
I mean, everybody wants to use the MDT
yep.
triple pull.
Yep.
You want to pack a 2.5 pound, sorry, MDT, 2.5 pound dry bipod. You're using the Tricer. For the past 3 years, I've been running the Hatch out west and really, really like it. Just moved to the new Gen 2. Shot it at the match a week and a half ago. It worked really, really well for me. What's really nice is, you know, I can go way prone. I can go up. I can go way up high.
Right.
I watch, especially when I watch the really experienced shooters come up to a course of fire, there's a log. Most people are going to lay their rifle over the log and then use their body for rear support. Here, you use your tripod over the top of the log and then use the log as the rear support. Mm. And you're super stable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. I've done that now a few times, but...
Nice.
It's nice when you can go long, with a long tripod, so bipod.
All right. Before we get into your
questions, you're read my handwriting.
I don't know if I'll be able to.
Yeah.
Maybe you will.
I didn't write it for you.
You never do. Before we do that, to finish up your hunting thing, because I want to ask him some hunting questions. What's your favorite hunt you've ever done, Alan?
Boils down to three.
Okay.
It's probably going to be my Alaska grizzly hunt where I shot the moose with the handgun at 15 yards.
That turned into a moose hunt.
Turned into a moose hunt.
Can you give me a 1 minute recap?
Went up for grizzly, had a rifle, handgun was there for backup, 45 Colt,
mm-hmm.
4 5/8 inch Ruger Blackhawk with a 335 grain cast bullet I put together. And on day three, when we went after a grizzly, when we got there, the grizzly was gone, the moose was there. Conversation led to let's go, and we went down after it. And the outfitter called the moose into me, walked past me at 15 yards, and I put him down. He only went 15 yards and tipped over dead.
Nice.
At that time, I had zero interest in a moose with a rifle, but with a handgun, heck yes.
Do you still somewhat regret pulling the trigger on that? Because how many days did you have left on your grizzly hunt?
Probably about five, but okay. No. My best friend, he shot that. I'm pretty sure it was that grizzly that we went after, gorgeous grizzly. So he came out of it with the, I got to actually put my hands on that bear, and it was a gorgeous one. If I'd had to do it all over again, it would be a hard choice whether to go for the grizzly or a moose with a handgun.
Right, yeah. Okay. So... we'll take that as your favorite.
Yeah.
What's one hunt that you want to do that you've never done before and why?
I think either cougar or whitetail. I've been whitetail hunting, never gotten one. Never been cougar hunting. I think I better focus on the cougar one first.
I mean, that's a tag that you can have every year in Utah. Why aren't you doing it?
I need some help.
No, you don't. Didn't you shoot one without the help of dogs?
That was pure luck, but yeah.
See, well, I don't think I'm that lucky.
I'll at least admit it.
Well, no, I understand that. I'm just saying there's opportunity.
I've never seen a cougar in the wild in my life.
So this is what you do, Alan. You stop shooting so many matches,
right?
And you stop reloading every weekend.
And you just go sit somewhere.
Yeah, and you just start hunting.
I could do that. I might get
itchy. It's a novel concept.
My trigger finger might start twitching, but because I'm not pulling the trigger enough.
Yeah. Just
shoot rocks while you're out there if you're bored.
Then the cougars won't show up.
What's more important, trigger finger or cougar?
Oh, cougar.
Okay.
If I'm out there doing that.
What type of whitetail hunt do you want to do? Like a run-of-the-mill, like Texas whitetail hunt?
I want to
kill a little 130-pound whitetail?
No. I want it 180, 190, 200.
Wow. Shoot for the stars.
If you're going for the
stars. If a whitetail hunt is a bucket list hunt, I guess it's got to be 190-inch whitetail.
Yeah, I guess it should.
Yeah. Hmm. That's my bucket list right there.
Bucket list.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the whole reason that we actually got on this podcast. One, it was to get to know Alan.
Yeah.
But let's... quick before we do that, because I want to keep this under an hour, and we're right at about 40 minutes.
Okay.
Talk me through kind of your day-to-day / a week in the life of Alan from Barnes.
Come in at 7, a little before. Turn the phones on at 7:30. Work on emails.
Yeah.
Work on sales that, sales come in, and I have to fill out, do computer forms.
Right.
and then start then answer the phones, and everything else is in between the phones. Phones is primary, and then everything else fills in.
Gotcha. So what do you feel like most of your phone calls are?
A huge one is finding is getting our bullets to shoot more accurately.
Okay.
And that is through changing the distance off the lance or the cartridge overall length.
Okay.
Copper bullets like to jump.
Yeah.
And as I like to say, they're like Evel Knievel wanting to jump the Snake River Canyon. You guys have probably heard me say it 100 times.
So yeah. I'm going to jump in here. Yeah. I was actually encouraged to get you to say that, and I didn't even have to like prod you at all. It came out naturally.
Yeah. It just
the Evel Knievel story. I didn't even know what it was. I'd never heard it before. Now
you're not old enough.
No, I know Evel Knievel.
He probably says it at least once a day.
Somebody else in the office was like, hey, you need to get Alan to talk about Evel Knievel. And I didn't really fully understand it. Now I get it. Mitchell's laughing over there.
He's close enough. He can hear my phone calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you say it once a day on the phone?
Yeah. 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 At least once. Okay. I said it about an hour ago.
Yeah. Nice.
So.
All right. So that's kind of the life of Alan at Barnes.
Yeah. And I get into some phone calls that I really enjoy talking with people, because my wife says, not only do I like talking to people, I like teaching people.
Right.
And if I can have the perfect consumer on the phone, then I've got someone who I can impart my wisdom, impart my decades of experience, so that they can have a better quality of, you know, as far as an experience out there themselves. And they can attain that quicker and easier.
Right.
When I have someone call me up and they say, I can't get these things to shoot accurately, almost the first question I ask is, where are you seating the bullets? The guy today said, well, they're almost touching the lands. I went, no. These things want to start at least 50 thousandths off the lands. And then you actually, I would say, suggest you work your powder charge up at 50 thousandths off the lands. Once you kind of settle on your powder charge, then do what I call a DOL test, distance off the lands, and shoot a group at 50, the next three shots, 75 off, 100 off, 125 to 150. As a minimum.
So you're almost doing kind of like a different type of ladder test there.
It is a different type of ladder test.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's as a minimum. So that's 15 shots.
Right.
I'll even say if you're not compressing the powder so much, which is not a pressure issue, but by the way, a lot of people are afraid to compress loads. Don't. What raises its ugly head is that your seating depth consistency can suffer if you're compressing the powder enough.
Okay. And
so going 175 off the lands is also a definite option there. My 300 PRC, it likes right between 150 and 175. Our factory PRC ammo with the same 208 LRX is at 162 off, right in the middle of that sweet spot. I have a 9.3 by 62 that shoots our 250 tip triple shock. Years ago, I hand-throated the throat with a hand reamer, went a little bit too aggressive. Okay, ruined the accuracy for the 250 Accubonds. I used to shoot in that, but I did that to shoot cast bullets. For our triple shock, a thing is jumping over an inch and a quarter, and it's stupid accurate.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think that actually is something interesting to talk about is our factory ammo, the Vortex ammo, and the Vortex LR. You know, it's very accurate.
Yeah.
And one, they're good bullets. We hold it to tight standards. We do a lot of testing and development. But I think a piece of it is just that these copper bullets don't mind to jump in a factory configuration to SAMI cartridge over a length and to be mag length loaded. Most of the time you are going to be far off the lands.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's why one of the reasons why that factory ammo shoots so good is because when compared to traditional cup and quarter bullets that might be more finicky and that want to be closer. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that hand loader, right?
Right.
You know, they're traditional, like, oh, I got to get this close to the lands. I'm going to seat it out further.
Yep.
And so they do that if they've never loaded our bullets before, our copper bullets. And like Alan's saying, okay, it's kind of opposite with these.
Right.
But it's kind of interesting to think about is like on a hand loader side, what I would do to get a lead core bullet to shoot better sometimes is move it closer.
Mm-hmm.
With our copper bullets, it's not necessarily the case. But the flip side of that is our ammo can shoot so well in standard conventional chambers where maybe a lead core doesn't. You know, I'll bring up a Weatherby. Weatherby cartridges are known to have a lot of freebore, right? A long throat.
Yep.
I had just a Weatherby Vanguard 300 Win Mag years ago. I actually used it to kill my big bull in Utah. That thing with our 180 TTSX was 250 thou off the lands.
Okay.
I mean, that's a quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
Yep. And in conventional hand-loading wisdom,
yeah,
you'd be like, no, that thing's flat out not going to shoot. and it would shoot sub MOA.
You know?
I mean, it was consistent sub minute. So something pretty interesting.
Nice.
So,
that was a good little knowledge bomb there.
Yeah. Usually when you're jumping that far, you're not pushing the bullet into the case that far.
Yeah.
You just have a throat that's probably longer than normal.
Right.
So I was wondering where that 250,000 came from that we suggest that you can go up to. So
yeah, like in the lab, we have test barrels because obviously we measure everything, right? We record everything. We know when we test bullets off the press, we know everything's tracked. Barrel serial number, you know, load data, lot number of powder, primer, all of the above, charge, everything. And we monitor and track DOL, you know, distance off the lands. And there are test barrels that are even sometimes 0.4, 0.5, you know, 400, 500 thou off the lands, pushing half an inch.
Yeah.
You know, generally at that point, Talon's point, most of these are probably worn out barrels. The throat's, you know, long gone, but they still shoot. And they can still shoot really good with these copper bullets.
Interesting case is the Ultra Mags. They have really long throats too, and our 180 grain Vortex load is same bullet in our Win Mag, but hands down the most accurate round on the market for a 300 round. It can be a extremely finicky load. The round, the 300 Ultra Mag, not our ammo, but it shoots lights out, and that thing nominally in a Sammy Min chamber is over 0.4 inches. I mean, it's over 3/4 of an inch, or not 3/4, 3/8 of an inch, and it shoots lights out. It likes jump.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Bullet expansion. If you want to go into one more,
what are we doing? Frequently asked. Did we already start this and you didn't even tell me?
We got through the first one.
We might be too far into this.
Yeah, we might be too far
into this. That's like an episode of itself.
Yeah, maybe we should save that for another day.
We did cover some of that in a previous podcast.
Give me another frequently asked question. Let me see if I can even read one of these and I can maybe pick one out.
I can't read it upside down. I'm good at reading upside down.
All right, let's play a best bullet for XYZ game.
Okay. I think Greg's better at this than I am.
So can you kind of explain the question?
Okay.
That you get there?
Do
people call in and say, I've got this gun and this caliber. What's the best bullet for it?
Yes.
Or do they say, I've got this caliber. What's the best bullet for
it? Yeah, they do ask stuff like that. And I'm going to come back with like, okay, what are you hunting?
Right.
How far out would your typical shot be? How far out do you feel comfortable taking a shot?
And if it seems like very much like what we talked about in episode 2.
Yeah.
About bullet selection.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if I got a guy somewhere in the Midwest, East, hunting whitetails, and 100 yards might be a long shot,
right?
No reason to go to an LRX.
Yep.
Probably not even a TTSX.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot a TSX.
Right.
They're known for better weight retention. The accuracy is going to be just as good.
Yep.
The tip, a lot of people believe that the tip, and correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, that the tip is needed for expansion. It's not. You can pull that tip off, and that bullet will expand just as good.
Right.
Because they use fluid. All three of these bullets use fluid. Did you cover that? Am I covering something else?
We've covered a lot of it, but I think you're on the right. I mean,
it's always good to hear it two or three times.
For sure. I will add, if you know, just to add to you, when you said if you pull the tip out, you will change potentially the expansion characteristics.
We do not recommend pulling the tip out to make a TTSX.
Yes,
we don't.
But you're right, it still will expand. Generally speaking, at high velocities, it's going to expand more because the cavity's bigger and you're probably going to shed petals.
Right.
But you're right. Yeah, I mean, and we kind of covered this. The tip can help initiate expansion, but it's more the extreme cases. Yeah. I've seen on extreme angles. I've seen at times that maybe through brush, or if you clip a rib bone, say just at an extreme angle, I've seen where the tipped version can do better than the TSX version.
Got it.
So I would actually say, even if I was only shooting 200-300 yards, I'm going to lean more toward TTSX.
Me too.
But, you know, we already covered this in the TSX, TTSX, LRX video.
There's probably
podcast. There are
exceptions to that.
There are. There's always going to be exceptions. Yeah.
Shorter distances or even longer distances.
Yeah.
Depends on the bullet and how fast it's launched. So,
Ellen, how often do you get request for new calibers that we don't currently carry?
Multiple times a week.
What do you feel like is some of the top calibers that people are requesting?
The 22s, like the 22 arc, 22 Creedmoor.
Okay.
Same with the 6. 6 Creedmoor, 6 arc. 400 Legend.
Yep.
Now, this is actual loaded cartridges by us.
Sure.
Okay. Occasionally the 257 Weatherby. Let's see, 25, 26. I'm getting a lot more requests for the bore rider bullets.
Bore rider.
But that's not a cartridge, that's a bullet itself.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Those have been the big hot topics lately. So.
Yeah, I'd say in 2025, the 308 212 bore rider has finally been realized.
Yeah. Thanks to Vortex Nation.
Thanks to Vortex Nation. They did an awesome job.
Right.
Showcasing the capabilities and the performance. You know, it's kind of lived in the shadows for a lot of years. We knew what it was.
Yeah.
Right.
But they did a good job of helping to show the world what its capabilities are.
Right.
Did a great job of doing that, too.
Yeah.
All right. Last one that I have. We have 8 minutes to get this one. I think we can do it.
Yeah.
You got barrel cleaning on there.
Okay.
You know, I've heard that if you are making the switch from lead to copper, that you need to scrub your barrel completely.
It is advisable to.
Yep.
Because if you're running cup and core bullets, which have gilding metal in the jackets,
yep,
that gilding metal is harder than the copper that we use in our bullets, which is pure copper, basically. And if you've got a layer or that gilding metal layer, it has the potential to not allow our bullets to achieve their best potential as far as accuracy is concerned.
Yep.
So we suggest just a basic barrel cleaning with like our Barnes CR10.
Right.
It has ammonia in it. Ammonia is known for dissolving copper. All of us have probably walked away from our barrel and forgotten, like, oh my gosh, that's right, it's in there for hours, or you come back the next morning, crud, I forgot to get it out. Barrel's fine. Wipe it out, barrel's fine. There's been no damage.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of fear that happens, but we've not seen it here, and we're probably cleaning 30 barrels a day here.
Right.
So clean it down with the Barnes CR10. When you stop getting the blue patch, or, you know, the blue-tinged patch coming out, you know you're good to go. We also take a flashlight look in. You can typically see in about the first inch. If you're not seeing any copper streaks and you're not getting blue patches, then you're typically okay. Then when you go to the range, have a couple, three, maybe four or five fouling loads with our bullets.
Yep.
Okay. And foul it. And then you let the barrel cool. And then go do all your serious load development, rifle sighting in your scope, stuff like that.
And once that you, let's say, make the switch to copper, or it's a brand new gun and you're shooting copper from the get-go, do you really notice any need to clean more often or less often?
That is such a subjective question, I think. It really is. I think it depends on what bullet, the pressures,
The powder, the caliber, and the
quality of the barrel.
Yeah, there's
a factory barrel.
There's a lot of variables.
Yeah.
But absolutely, like the practices we follow in the Ballistics Lab, generally, I mean, obviously, ultra magnums, PRCs, you know, high velocity cartridges, you're going to clean those more.
Yep.
You know, your 7 PRC is going to get cleaned more than your 308 Win.
Yep.
Generally speaking. But the practices we follow for copper bullets is our general rule of thumb is about 50 rounds. We decopper about 50 rounds.
Okay.
Where with, if we're testing lead core bullets, you know, we're building match burners or, you know, some barminators or whatever.
Yep.
You know, we're going to go more 100, 150, depending. We let the barrel kind of tell us, you know, we see accuracy degrade.
Right.
Then we're going to clean. Yep. Accuracy comes back in, you know, we move on.
But,
got it.
You know, my hunting rifle, I'm shooting LRXs, I try to keep it in that 40 to 50 round range.
Okay.
I mean, my first 6.5 by 47 barrel was a Krieger. One time I went 2,500 rounds without cleaning the barrel. I cleaned the action, cleaned the chamber, yeah. never touched the barrel. Because of my point of impact, everything was still where I wanted it to.
Right.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't recommend that.
No.
I know these guys wouldn't.
Clean your barrel.
Yeah, keep it clean. It helps.
Well, sweet. How was your first podcast, Alan?
Good. It's cold in here.
Oh, my gosh.
It feels amazing. It's like 100 degrees outside.
Yeah. It's so nice.
I can tell it gets hotter outside because the air conditioning kicks on earlier in the morning.
Yeah.
It was 10. That's 9.
That's what happens during the summertime.
8 in the morning. Yeah.
In middle to southern Utah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being such a big aspect of this, Mitchell. I'm glad that you said 5 words the entire time. That's all right. And always, Greg.
Mitchell does not mind.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
We appreciate everybody listening to the Barnes Bullet Points podcast.